Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And ordinarily at this point I say, well, just hold your calls because we have a very special guest. Well, we had a very special guest until about 2 minutes ago when our producer called Bill Gertz, who is a reporter from the Washington Times, who's written a book called A Breakdown, which, of course, is sort of a whitewash of why nothing was done to prevent the September 11th attack. And Mr. Gertz said that he was had too bad a cough, he couldn't come on. And so we're going to just have open lines, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about my concern about how we got to where we are today. Now, our government certainly knew that the World Trade Center was a target. How did they know that the World Trade Center was a target? Well, because at beginning back in about 1981, from 1981 up to at least 1985, over in Iran, and of course that was the country where we toppled the Shah and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power back in July of 1979. But from about 81 to 85 at least, why they had a flight school over there, well, where they were teaching people to hijack American planes and crash them into buildings. How do we know that? Well, of course, it's a wonderful book. It's been thoroughly suppressed in America. You can hardly find a copy of it any place. It's called Attack America. It's written by a man named Joseph Podansky. But, of course, if you can't find the book, you can certainly get the New Yorker magazine for the 24th of September last year. And there was a lot of information put in the first few weeks after the attack before they could begin to censor everything. And in that magazine, that's the New Yorker for the 24th of September of last year, why Joseph Podansky is quoted as saying that there was a school in Iran where they were training the Islamic terrorists how to hijack planes and crash them into our buildings. Of course, you would only do that one time, but certainly this was something that was they were contemplating and they were planning on doing at that time. And this is, of course, mentioned again in the New Yorker for the 24th of September. Then, of course, we know that in 1994, a group of Islamic terrorists hijacked a plane in Algiers and flew it to Marseille, and they traded some of the hostages for 27 tons of fuel. And when the gendarmes questioned the hostages, why they found out that the Islamic terrorists were planning on flying the remaining hostages and the plane to Paris and crashing it into the Eiffel Tower. So it was well known even in 1994 that this was the plan. And then in 1995 was Operation Pachinko. And Operation Pachinko was a plan that was found on a laptop computer in the Philippines. And there was a man named Ramzi Yosef. And Ramzi Yosef was the mastermind behind the first attack on the World Trade Center, and that was in February of 1993. And Ramzi Yosef had been allowed to get away, and he went back to the Philippines, where he had been working in the past. In fact, Ramzi Yosef had met with Terry Nichols in 1992. That was 3 years before the attack on the Murrah building. And, of course, in 1994, why Terry Nichols was meeting with Ramzi Yosef there, planning on how they were going to blow up buildings in the United States and learning how to blow up buildings in the United States and the techniques of making an efficient bomb. And, of course, we know this. We have a man, and we'll be doing some interviews with him, and he had actually talked to the police officers over there. His name is Bob Bickle, and he had actually talked to them, and there was no question that the operation that was planned at that time, and it was on the laptop computer when the police raided an apartment house with a fire in it, was two parts. One was, of course, to hijack a number of planes and crash them all simultaneously over the Pacific with bombs in them, but the other part was to hijack American airliners and crash them into buildings, specifically the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Transamerica building in San Francisco. Now, there's no question that this was the plan. Bill Gertz, who was to be our guest this afternoon, had written this up in a something we had found, a Bill Gertz a backgrounder, and this was written up in July of the year 2001, and if you'd like to see that, we'll send you a copy. So 2 months before attack on the World Trade Center, Bill Gertz had written in a backgrounder, Operation Pajinka, crash planes into the World Trade Center. So it was well known, but then how then can you explain to the American people that you did nothing to protect the World Trade Center? I mean, we can show you pictures of the State Department syllabus on terrorism in the United States, and there are the two twin towers on the front page, on the cover page, and with the crosshairs of a sniper rifle centered on the North Tower of the Trade Center, the video program with a lone gunman from the X-Files, and of course 6 months before the attack simulated, and this story on they were on a plane and the controls had been taken over by the computer had been taken over, they couldn't access it, they were heading into the World Trade Center, there was a and of course at the last minute they were able to take back the controls and save the plane, but it was there on television. I mean, it was very obvious that this was the one target you would expect the terrorists to attack. But our government said we never suspected that they were going to hijack planes. And yet, of course, in 1998, there had been reports that terrorists were planning on hijacking a plane and loading it with explosives and sending it into the World Trade Center. And if you doubt that, we actually have the report from the Intelligence Committee that's come out, at least the first report we provide you for $5 if you call in, 28 pages of instance after instance where they knew the attack was going to be here and they knew it was going to involve planes, and many of those reports were the World Trade Center. And our leaders had the audacity to say, gee, we never thought this would happen. Well, right now we've got Fred from Salinas. Fred, can you hang on? Because we've got to take a quick break. Will you head on till after the break?
Yep.
Okay, fine. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to tell you about, well, some of the items that we are certainly encouraging you to consider here at Radio Liberty. One of them, of course, is the Be Alive products, the Be Alive Royal Jelly products. And, of course, they're designed to give you additional strength. I've taken them for 10 years myself, and I'm doing pretty well for somebody who's almost 74 years of age, going from 6 o'clock in the morning until 11:30 at night with an hour's nap along the way. The Be Alive products are basically derived from, this is the royal jelly, a product which comes from the beehives, and there's very little of it in any beehive, but this is what the queen bee eats, and she, of course, lives about 6 years, where the average bee who eats honey lasts about 6 weeks. So there's something in it. It's good for bees, and apparently the Federal Trade Commission allows them to say this will give you energy and, of course, also help you with handling stress. So if you'd like to learn more about the product, call 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. And actually, it's sold with a money-back guarantee, and after 3 months, if you're not convinced it's helped you, why, they'll give you your money back without any questions asked. Again, the number is 866-233-7500. And then we hope that many of you out there will consider seriously changing your long-distance carrier over to Promise Vision. And, of course, when you do, 25% of your long-distance rates will come back to Radio Liberty. Their number is 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. The nice thing is when you call them, you get a real nice individual Their rates are competitive. Their products are excellent. And we've been very, very pleased with their service. Again, 866-448-5631. They're a Christian company. I've known the people in it for many years, and I can recommend it to you without any hesitation. That's Promise Vision, and their number again, 866-448-5631. And we hope that many of you, of course, will give serious consideration to joining Promise Vision. This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty, and we've got Fred calling us from Salinas. Hi, Fred. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon. I just wanted to ask if you got to watch the Nightline last night.
No, I didn't. What did they have on?
Nightline last night, I know you have a very big audience here, but Nightline last night had a very good article about how the battle in Afghanistan was going, chasing Bin Laden and all of his people until they got up to Tora Bora, and then we shut down our attack for 3 days and let them escape into Pakistan.
Oh, was that when they allowed the planes to come in to take away some of the people?
Yes.
All right.
And they were also paying off a lot of the. It appeared I didn't get to watch the very first part of it. I was hoping maybe somebody had watched the first part, but. It appeared like they were paying off the Northern Alliance big cash, big piles of cash, and it appeared like it was the Northern Alliance that let the Bin Laden and all those people go.
Well, you know, there's a fascinating article, and it's in the August 19th Newsweek magazine of this year, and it tells about how, of course, a lot of the Al-Qaeda were being driven into a sort of a trap from which there was no escape. And here it is, August 19th, night of this year, Newsweek magazine, I think it's page 34. And all of a sudden, when they just about got all these Al-Qaeda people trapped, and they think Osama bin Laden's with them, in comes a fleet of black helicopters and scoops up all these people. Now, where do you think Osama bin Laden got a fleet of black helicopters? Well, a government official said, well, they were ours. We were just sort of dropping off or picking up special forces. We were doing something anyway. They were ours. Well, I think that we have to understand that Osama bin Laden worked for the United States during the Afghan War. And, of course, those people who really think that we ever tried to get him really need to get my new video. It's called 911 Contrived. And we give you example after example after example of how we could have gotten Osama bin Laden at any time. We never tried to get him. And any of you would like that article, it was in La Figueroa, the French newspaper, talking about how between July 4th and July 14th of last year, just 2 months before the attack in September, Osama bin Laden was in the American hospital in Dubai, meeting with the head of the CIA there and with his family. And this, of course, is circulated all over Europe and totally blacked out in the United States. Maybe things are not as they appear to be, Fred. Maybe we're being misled. Maybe everything really is perception, having very little to do with reality.
Well, I sure thought it was quite interesting that, you know, that we had a major news network that would actually run this type of information. It's kind of different. But somebody might be able to explain a little bit more if they got to see the whole program. It was very interesting. I didn't quite understand why they were paying off all these people, but it sure looked like they had them all bottled up right there at Tora Bora, and then they let them go.
And of course, we have an article out of the Washington Times that quotes a high government official who said, and this was shortly after the beginning of the Afghan War, "Our policy is not Osama bin Laden first, it's Osama bin Laden last, because if we were to capture Osama bin Laden, why, how would we justify continuing this war?"
Well, sure.
And that's what it's really all about. How do you justify for the American people? And so we didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. And we never tried to get Osama bin Laden. In 1996, the Sudanese government offered to give us Osama bin Laden. And of course, he'd already killed a lot of Americans, in the bombing of Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. But of course, the Bill Clinton administration refused to take him. They offered to give him to us, along with all their files. We wouldn't take them. And then they offered to turn him over to Saudi Arabia, who we work very closely with, and they wouldn't take him. In 1997, according to the book Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America, written by Joseph Badansky, and we do carry the book, in 1997, why the Taliban arrested Bin Laden, and they were going to turn him over to the Saudis, because, of course, he was a fugitive from Saudi Arabia, and an enemy of Saudi Arabia, and he was talking about overthrowing the monarchy. And strangely enough, the Saudis wouldn't take him. Maybe things are not as they appear to be. And, of course, the bin Laden family is very close to the Bush family. That is, of course, Osama bin Laden's family. In fact, it's said that every time George Bush goes to Saudi Arabia, he stays with the bin Ladens. And after the 9/11 attack, the FBI, protected the bin Laden family. There were 20 or 30 of them here. And they protected them. They took them to the Saudi embassy until the flight was resumed. And then they were allowed to fly out.
They flew them out while everybody else was grounded.
Right. Isn't that interesting? maybe things are not as they appear to be. Anything else, Fred?
No, I think that'll do it.
Okay.
Maybe somebody will have a better, more about what was on that program last night, though. It was really fascinating.
And that was Dateline last night.
Yeah, Nightline.
Nightline, okay.
Have a good evening.
Good night. In fact, last week, and I think it was on Nightline, they actually were talking about a man named John O'Neill. Now, he was the assistant director of the FBI in charge of counterterrorism. And on that program, about a week ago, on Nightline, they had his chart. He had made a chart, and he was talking about Operation Pachinko. John O'Neill understood that, of course, they were planning on hijacking our planes, and one of their major targets was the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers there. And, of course, every effort was made by the FBI to block investigation of counterterrorism. FBI agents weren't allowed to investigate it. The man in charge of counterterrorism for the FBI wasn't allowed to investigate it. Why? In fact, in August of last year, John O'Neill quit the FBI. He was so disgusted with him because they blocked him at every turn. Why would you do something like that? Well, they said, we knew there was going to be an attack, but we thought it was going to be overseas. Why would they think it was going to be overseas? The Moroccan government had told us it was going to be here. The Jordanian government was told it was going to be on America. The German government had told them. Putin had told them. The Mossad had told them. The Spanish government had told them the attack was coming on America. And they said, no, we were sure it was going to be overseas. That's the reason we didn't do anything here. Now, I have an article where Gary Hart, who was the co-chairman of the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century, says that on the 5th of September, 6 days before the attack, he told Condoleezza Rice that there was going to be an attack on the United States. And that's all laid out in the report, the Phase 1 report that came out of the Hart Commission, the commission he co-chaired. It was all made up of CFR members, and Condoleezza Rice is a member of the CFR as well. And, of course, that report that came out in September of 1999, called the New World Coming Report, talks about the terrorist attacks that are going to be in America, and Americans are going to die on American soil. This was a 1999 report. Now, it's available through Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we have the Phase 2 and 3 reports by the same committee. And, of course, the Phase 3 report came out in January of 2001, and it was talking all about the Office of Homeland Security. They called it the National Security Agency, but it was basically this whole plan to reconstruct our government, and of course they knew exactly what they were doing. Everything that has happened, even before the 9/11 attacks, had been scripted beforehand. And that is the great tragedy. The plan for the Model State Emergency Health Power Act was laid out in the year 2000. The plan for this USA Patriot Act was laid out long before. And, of course, we're going to be doing some programs with Steve William Michaels, who's written a book called The Greatest Threat, and it's on the USA Patriot Act. The USA Patriot Act redefines terrorism. And, of course, it massively expands the police state power of the federal government and begins to merge local and federal police forces. And it has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. It redefines terrorism so that people who listen to a program or talk like I do could be considered terrorists. Well, we've got Charles calling in from Seaside. Hi, Charles. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. A question or comment?
Comment first. I wanted to say, the chess game that America's playing as far as Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, Iran, and all the Afghanistan and China is just very appalling that none of us as Americans are just coming out in the streets and masses and saying no. It's like Hitler with the lulling in the whole mass into a frantic fizz, and then all of a sudden it pops.
The reason people aren't doing that is because we've got Barbara Streisand on one side, and we don't want to be on Barbara Streisand's side. She's against the war. We've got the communists against the war. And people don't understand this whole thing is being orchestrated to divide us into two sides, you know, the good guys and the bad guys. The bad guys, are against the war. The good guys are in favor of the war. Well, there's something wrong with this picture. We ought to all be against this war. It's stupid. And not only that, but it is dangerous. And it is designed to change America forever. And you have to go back and read what Colonel House said in Foreign Affairs magazine in July of 1923 after 21 million people had died in the First World War. And he said, if war had not come with a great ferocity in 1941, the idea of a community of nations would probably have laid dormant, because great changes seldom manifest themselves without tremendous upheavals. Great changes seldom manifest themselves without tremendous upheavals. The First World War wasn't fought to make money. It was fought to change the world and to bring about the New World Order he wanted. And that's what all the wars have fought about. And it's about time the American people understood. Hey, we're going to have to take a quick break here. Do you want to hang on until after the break?
I have to go, but my question to you, if you can answer afterwards, is when are you going to come to Seaside and speak with some of us over here?
I'm glad you asked that. Now, we're going to be putting on a program on November 23rd over here in Aptos, an all-day-long seminar at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And I hope you and everybody from Seaside will be over here. That's the 23rd of November, the weekend before Thanksgiving, and it's going to be an all-day seminar. It's going to be a great time, and we hope you can come. Just give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks so very much. Bye. Okay, and I'm going to ask Ralph, who's calling from Oklahoma, if he'll just hang on here. But right now, of course, I want to mention that we offer the Miracle 2 soap products, and we hope that many of you out there would want to try them. We can't make any medical claims for them, but we can tell you that an awful lot of people who use them really feel that the things that have happened to them are almost miraculous, and people say that their rashes are better, and people say that their heartburn's better. Now, all that we can do is suggest, if you want to try it and see if it'll help you, why do it? There's a soap and a moisturizing soap, and there is a lotion and a gel, and there's a neutralizer, and give them a try. We can get an introductory set of all these products at a reduced price, but give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you'd like to try the Miracle 2 soap products, we hope you'll like them as well as my family does. We've used them for well over a year now, and we're very pleased. That's Miracle Soap, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, our regularly scheduled guest was unavailable today, so it's just you and me, and we've got Ralph calling from Oklahoma. If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Ralph, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I hate to do this, but I think we all need to be a watchman. And Dr. Bates, that was on your last hour, I'm sure you don't get a chance to listen to him when he's on live during the day with your busy schedule and all.
No, I really don't.
Well, there's times, I think he's a wonderful man, but there's times when you get very confused.
All right, fine. Well, he doesn't believe in a lot of the things I believe in as far as conspiracy is concerned.
Okay, I guess, yeah.
But, I think he's pretty good as far as the finances are concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody is not going to really understand what's going on. Remember, I've been studying this for 40 years. I've traveled all over the world. I lived in Africa trying to understand what the Boer War was all about. So I have a little advantage over a lot of the people. And I'm not always right, but we're doing pretty well right at the present time. So, I like Larry, but certainly I know that he doesn't really understand some of the things that we understand. And you listen to Radio Liberty regularly, you probably have a pretty good insight into what's going on, don't you?
Oh, definitely. Well, there's times when he does his dead level best to, he almost rivals Rush Limbaugh in defense of Bush, for one, and also on the Illuminati, he just detests anybody mentioning that. He says, you're going to have to give me an address if there is such a thing.
Well, we can be glad to give him some of the things that we got from the Jeffersonian, collection back at the Smithsonian Library of Congress, and we got this through the office of gentleman who is the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, and we actually have this. It was written in 1903 about the Clintonian Illuminati. And anybody who wants to know about this, I'd be glad to send them something that's put out by the Luciferians, and it's called the Spiritual Hierarchy. They publish it, and they tell you that they run the world. And if any of our listeners would like a copy of what they send out to their followers, give us a call and ask for the pamphlet on the Spiritual Hierarchy, and we'll send it to you free of charge. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Have you read my book on the Brotherhood of Darkness, Ralph?
Yes.
Well, maybe I ought to send a copy to him.
I wanted to get in with him one day, and I saw, well, they ran out of time and all, and I wanted to mention to him that very book, and that would involve the Illuminati and all the things that he does his best to debunk. And that's the Skull and Bones, Bush is... there's no connection there anymore, maybe when he was in school and the Bohemian Grove and all. It's just constant defense of those folks, and at the same time turn around and talk just like you.
Okay, well,
times, and it's confusing to people.
All right, well, we don't want to confuse them, because there's enough to confuse them.
Yeah.
God bless you. Thanks
Thank
so much
you,
for calling.
Yeah,
bye-bye. Okay, fine. Let's see. We're going to go to... Let's go to Dick calling from Capitola. Hi, Dick. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I wanted to ask you if you would elaborate a little bit on the Homeland Security. I've been alerting people to that I've been saying, have you ever heard of a Defense Department? That's what they're supposed to do.
All right. Well,
but,
let me
But, well, one other thing to, that I, as to where it is now, because it seems like it's being blocked, and that's what's gotten me a little confused.
All right. Well, let me tell you, first of all, if when you read the newspaper, why is it being blocked? What are they telling you why it's being blocked?
Well, the Democrats. The Democrats are fighting Bush.
But why are they blocking it? They're blocking it supposedly. You're being told it's being blocked because, of course, Bush wants to be able to take away the civil service status of these employees. There are going to be 170,000 of them, and the Democrats want to preserve the civil service status. And that, of course, is a lie. Now, there may be, with any lie, there's a little bit of truth to it, because, of course, the civil service status will preserve the whistleblower's protection of government employees. And Bush doesn't want them to have that. In other words, if there's corruption, dishonesty, treachery, treason, he doesn't want them to be able to come forward and have whistleblower protection. But if you read what Senator Byrd is saying, he's saying, look, you're restructuring the government. You are doing away with this whole constitutional system of government. We should not be doing that, and that's why he's trying to block this. But the American people are not being told that the Office of Homeland Security is a blueprint for a constitutional dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
What it does, first of all, it takes 170,000 people. It takes 22 agencies and merges them into this one big organization under FEMA. What it does away with the system of checks and balances so that Congress will no longer be able to have anything to do with national security. The money will not have to be appropriated by Congress. It will basically be an executive dictatorship exactly as Adolf Hitler created in 1933 in response to the burning of the Reichstag. And Hitler said, look, these wicked communists burned down the Reichstag. I want this additional power. Now, I would never misuse this power. You can trust me. I would never misuse this. The only thing I want this to protect the public. So give me this power, and it will not be misused. Do you get my newsletter, Dick?
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, the Nick newsletter actually gives you the whole scenario of what this is all about. And then, of course, you can't separate the Office of Homeland Security from the USA Patriot Act. And, of course, that's where we redefine terrorism. Suppose that most people think this has to do with Islamic terrorism. It does not.
No.
We've redefined terrorism. Under these new rules and regulations, why the FBI now is going to be able to monitor churches and library use. How many Muslim terrorists do you think attend churches in America? I don't think very many of them. I think they probably go to mosques. But they've expanded so the FBI can begin to monitor churches.
Dr. Stan, I'm going to let you continue, but I'm on a cell phone in my car, so I'm
okay, God bless you. Thanks for calling, Dick.
Thank you.
I hope you'll be coming over to this all-day seminar we're going to have on the 23rd. Thanks so much for calling. And let's go to George calling from Toronto. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Monteith. I just have a couple comments to make, and I'll listen to your comments off the air. My wife and I just came back from going through Spain and Portugal, and, of course, in the evenings, we would put on some of the TV sets, and it was very, very interesting in watching CNN Europe and BBC World, and what got me was the constant rhetoric of the USA requiring to attack Iraq and Saddam Hussein and everything we've heard here, but it just sort of really hit me just how both those networks there were just constantly, didn't matter what time of the evening I put it on, it was always the same thing more or less going on.
Now, were they supporting our attack?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Absolutely. They were supporting the attack, the same thing we hear about the weapons of mass destruction, and it was constant on both those. The second thing was, one particular night on CNN Europe, there was a representative, and I didn't take down his name, from the IMF, and it was a very short interview, and basically he was talking about I believe the figure was the $7 trillion debt of the U.S., and he said essentially it's a concern to us, but he said not maybe in the next 2 or 3 years, we shouldn't get too upset about it, but he says at some point, yes, he says, we will have to look at this issue. It is of concern down the road.
Well, I think it's a big concern right now because it's not a $7 trillion debt. That's the that's the nominal debt, but actually it's $17 trillion debt when you take in all the other things. So we're in real trouble.
Yes. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you so much. And let's go to Larry calling from Louisiana. Hi, Larry.
Hi, good evening. I just wanted to ask you, they made us all commit the sin of using credit with the Federal Reserve note. Do you think that they will make us all commit the sin of cannibalism with genetically engineered meat that's going on the shelves with human genes in it?
Well, I really can't comment on that, but I think that a lot of strange things are going on today, and I'm much more worried about them forcing us to, they force us now to take their Federal Reserve notes, and then, of course, they sort of force us into this credit plastic economy. The next thing they want is to force us to take vaccinations. That's what I'm more concerned about than some of this genetically modified meat, although I tell you that, you know, we're trying to play God. And I don't think God's going to look very kindly on this. We're trying to redesign everything. We're trying to clone human beings. And it's only a matter of time before they do clone human beings and begin to grow organs. And God will not be mocked.
Okay, can I ask you, since you mentioned the shots, which I feel is a very dangerous thing, do you have you run across the use of the nanotechnology in the shots, which are on-demand release capsules, which can be steered to any part of the body and parked there and then released at will electronically, wirelessly?
Well, I have heard about them, but I'm really not an expert on it. And I really, if you have anything on that, I would appreciate very much your sending it to me. Tex Mars had talked about this, given a reference, and I wasn't able to track it down, and I got a little discouraged at that point. If you have anything, would you mind sending it to me at Post Office Box 999 in Soquel, California?
I've discovered a photograph of one.
Well, if you would get that to me, I would really appreciate that.
Okay, give me that box again.
Post Office Box 999.
Okay.
Soquel, S-O-Q-U-E-L. California 95073.
S O Q U E L.
Soquel, California, and I'd appreciate very much getting that.
I have a photograph of one. They're teaching the children that it's acceptable and you must do this.
Right. Well, of course, they're teaching us children a lot of things that they shouldn't be teaching them. And anybody who's got their children in government schools, if they love them, they're going to get them out.
Okay, thank you.
God bless you. Thanks so much for calling. That was Larry from Louisiana. And, of course, our telephone number of 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, this is the time I think we will tell our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs, who believe that there's a problem and would like to be part of our team. Right now, we're heard on almost 50 outlets across America, and of course, some of those are satellite and some of them are internet, but a lot of radio stations are Saturday program. One is heard on 6 stations. Another program we do is heard on about 32 or 33. It's only half an hour program, but it's heard all across America. And I just feel we're blessed to have that that outlet. So we're heard on almost 40 radio stations on the weekend. What a unique opportunity that is to reach out across America with the information that the mass media is concealing. And you have to understand there really is behind all of these secret societies the spiritual forces. I don't know how anybody can look at what's going on today without understanding that there's a conspiracy against God. It's described in the scriptures in Jeremiah 11:9 and Ezekiel 22:25 and the second Psalm. There's always been a conspiracy against God. And of course, the whole idea is to create a one world order and one world religion with the worship of Lucifer. And that's what this is all about. And of course, it's coming and it's coming very, very rapidly. I don't know whether there's going to be a pre-tribulation rapture. I hope and pray there is, but I'll just as soon work as if it's not going to take place, or if it does take place, that it may take place 30 years after America has fallen. And then what do you say to your children? Well, I just didn't believe anything bad was going to happen. We are put here to be involved. And as that one wonderful story in the scriptures about the master who went away and gave one servant five talents and one three and one talent, and the servant who did nothing with his talent. got the displeasure of his Lord. And that, of course, was the story of God going away. And, of course, he expects us to do something, not to sit back and do absolutely nothing. And the great tragedy of today is we have so many people who are so heavenly minded that no earthly good. Call us and join the Radio Liberty family. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course a regularly scheduled guest, did not show up. He said he had a very bad cough, so our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we'd love to have you give us a call if you have a question. I was beginning to talk about what was known about the attack on America, David Schipper. And David Schipper was the counsel for the Congressional Committee for the House of Representatives that impeached Bill Clinton. So David Schipper is a Democrat. He's very well known in Washington, D.C. He's a Chicago lawyer. And 6 weeks maybe 6 or 8 weeks before the September 11th attack, FBI agents came to him and said, look, we can't come forward, lose our jobs, but there's going to be an attack. It's going to be on Lower Manhattan. The attack is coming, and you've got to warn the people in Washington, D.C. So David Schipper went to Washington, D.C., and he knew John Ashcroft. He knew the people at the highest echelons of the leadership of both political parties, because he worked with them when they were working on the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And none of them would meet with him. And he kept trying to say, there's going to be an attack on Lower Manhattan, and it's coming within 6 weeks. And he started about the 1st of August. And nobody would meet with him. And, of course, every barrier was put in the way to keep him from getting the story out. My friend Dr. Garth Nicholson, and I've checked this story with him, and Garth and Nancy Nicholson have been working with the FBI and with the people in the special forces and the military on the Gulf War illness. And he told me that he had actually been told that there was going to be an attack. It was going to be on the Pentagon. It was coming on the 11th of September. And he, of course, contacted people in Washington, D.C. and put out that information. There was a story about a little boy, and this story was subsequently checked out by the FBI. And he was in a classroom going to school in New York City. And a week before the September 11th attack, he got up in class and he pointed out the window where you could see the Twin Towers. And he said, in a week, those towers won't be here. And, of course, after the Twin Towers, why, everybody remembered that. And they reported to the FBI, and, of course, his father immediately left the country. He was from Pakistan. And, of course, the boy simply said he'd heard this. And, no, it was common knowledge on the street within the Arab community there in Washington, D.C. It was well known the attack was going to come on the Twin Towers. So how could it be that our leaders didn't know that? Now, we know that on the 6th of August the president was notified that terrorists were planning on hijacking our planes. Now, we don't know what else he was told, because the CIA has placed that as top secret. Nobody is to know what the president knew. Why shouldn't we know what the president knew? Are we afraid Osama bin Laden is going to find out what the president knew, or Omar, Sheikh Omar, is going to learn what the president knew? Or we try to conceal that from the American people. But we do know that on the 6th of August, the president was told that the wicked Islamic terrorists were going to hijack American planes here in the United States. Now, nothing was said about crashing them in the World Trade Center as far as we know. But if you were the president of the United States and you were told that Islamic terrorists, who had already killed Americans in Ramada, who had killed Americans at the Khobar Towers, who'd killed Americans at our embassies in Africa. I think they killed 268 people at the two embassies and injured over 5,000. Who'd killed 17 Americans with the bombing of the Cole and the USS Cole in Yemen at the harbor there, who'd already slaughtered, machine-gunned some 70 tourists at Luxor in 1997, who were responsible for many other bombings and attacks and violent acts of indiscriminate terror. And they are going to hijack American airplanes. What would your response be if you were the president? Wouldn't you warn the airlines? Wouldn't you warn the pilots and tell them that they could carry a weapon? Wouldn't you insist that they keep the doors of their cabins shut at all times and maybe even install some emergency barriers there to keep anybody from breaking the doors down? Or wouldn't you perhaps even mobilize the National Guard, because you know this is coming? It's only a matter of time. After all, we've got reports from, you know, from Morocco and Syria and Germany and Russia and Spain and from the Mossad, and everybody knows the attack is coming on the United States. And you're the President of the United States. Wouldn't you declare a state of emergency, or maybe mobilize the National Guard, or begin putting armed marshals on all of our flights? Or if you wanted to stop the attack, wouldn't you have our planes in the air at any moment so that fighter planes would be patrolling our skies if you knew this was coming and it was only a matter of time? Instead of that, nothing was done. And the question is, why was nothing done? Well, of course, there's a wonderful book. It's called See No Evil. It's written by Robert Baer, who, by my calculations, was with the FBI, with the CIA about 25 years, and at times he was a station chief over in the Near East and Middle East. And of course, he eventually quit the CIA because he realized they weren't really trying to stop terrorism. But of course, in his book, See No Evil, in the preface to that, and we actually give you the exact quotation in my latest newsletter, he said that a reporter had been told by one of the highest CIA officials that when the smoke settled after September 11th, that the public would realize that this was not a failure for the CIA. This was a success. September 11th wasn't a failure. It was a success. How could the death of 3,000 people be a success unless you wanted it to happen? Unless you were going to use that to get America involved in a war, exactly as they used Pearl Harbor to get America involved in a war with Japan and a war with Germany, and 40 million people would die. That was a great success if you wanted a war. And do you honestly think the American people would be going to war now if it hadn't been for September 11th of last year? Where was the outcry? Well, I hope that you'll want to get our latest newsletter. It'll be out. This is the September newsletter, and it'll be going out here in the next 5 days or so. If you'd like a copy of that and you haven't got our newsletter before, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll go into the background of the attack. But even more than that, we'll go into the background of why wars are fought. And then, of course, what our high officials said. And then, of course, the Office of Homeland Security, the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, the United States Patriot Act, and what these are really all about. And ladies and gentlemen, they are not addressing Islamic terrorism. They're addressing transforming America into a constitutional dictatorship. And when you understand that, you'll understand why Senator Robert Byrd is back in Washington, D.C., saying, don't you understand that the Office of Homeland Security bill is going to transform America? It's going to do away with the checks and balances that have had executive and judicial and legislative branches of government. There's going to be only one all-powerful unit, and that's going to be the executive branch of government. Already they're refusing to provide information to members of Congress on various issues, whether it be the state of the weapons that Iraq has, or they're defying our courts. They're telling their employees of the government not to honor the Freedom of Information Act requests, which are the law of the land. They're withdrawing whistleblower protection. We have basically a lawless government that is incarcerating American citizens and depriving them of the right to habeas corpus. But as you see, it's done under the guise of, we're fighting Islamic terrorism. Anybody considered to be an enemy combatant can be arrested and held without trial and without redress to the courts and without redress to a lawyer. And ladies and gentlemen, well, of course, the fellow Padilla, he's not a very nice-looking guy. He's obviously, he's sort of a hood. He'd been a criminal, a petty criminal, and, you know, he'd embraced Islam, and we don't like some of the things Islam has, but he's still an American citizen. And if they can take away his rights, what makes you think they can't take away your rights or your children's rights? You have to understand that they are using, of course, the threat of Islamic terrorism to transform America. Which is why, in my estimation, a high CIA official would say, when the smoke settles after, when the dust settles after September 11th, why the American people will realize this was not a failure. This was a success. Because, you see, it's all about transforming America. Remember what Colonel House said back in 1923 in Foreign Affairs magazine. Great changes seldom manifest themselves without great upheavals. Great changes seldom manifest themselves without great upheavals. 21 million people died in the First World War, and probably twice that many carried the pain of their wounds to their deaths. 40 million people died in the Second World War, and probably twice that many people carried the pain of their wounds to their deaths. How many people will die in the coming Third World War? Do you honestly think this is going to be just a quick little war and it's going to be with Iraq and we do not have an intention to go after Iran, which is the real basis of most of this terrorism in the world? Osama bin Laden was working with Iran. If you don't believe it, you need to get the book written by Yosef Budansky, director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, one of the world's leading experts on terrorism. In his book, he tells you how Osama bin Laden was working with Iran. Are you reading about this in your paper? Of course you're not. You're not supposed to know what's really going on. And so you must understand that when you start a war, you never know how it'll end. They started the First World War with a little conflict in Sarajevo after the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. And 21 million lives later, four bloody years later, the war came to an end. The Second World War, Richard Mayberry, writing in his early warning newsletter, said, you know, a million people died every month for the last 2 years of the Second World War. A million people died every month, and the war could have ended and ended much, much sooner, and we kept that war going. And if you have any doubt about that, you can just give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll send you a copy of the article that was in the Chicago Tribune on the day that peace treaty was signed back there in Japan on the USS Missouri. And, of course, it will point out that Japan had been trying for 6 months to surrender, and we wouldn't accept their surrender. And we sent our boys to die on the shores of Iwo Jima and Okinawa, and we dropped two bombs on Japan, totally unnecessarily. Other than, of course, if you wanted to see death and destruction. If you'd like to read that article, you'll almost make you cry. It's not a very good reprint. It's an old one, but, of course, it's been faxed and it's been reproduced many times, but we'll send it to you free of charge. Call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. As for the Chicago Tribune article on how the Japanese tried to surrender, and we wouldn't let them. And, of course, remember, what goes around comes around. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you think that God is not going to judge America and judge the church in America for what we've done and allowed to happen because we've been just too busy, why, I think you don't understand that we are dealing not only with a loving God, but with a just God. Well, we're just about out of time, and so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders. We ask you to pray for our ministers, because they should be leading this battle. And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Remember, we're having an all-day seminar on the 23rd of November. That's a Saturday, and there'll be a luncheon and a syllabus. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, you need to be prepared for some very difficult times, because wars are fought not to defeat the enemy, but to change nations. And believe me, I think America, when this war ends, will be a far different nation than it is today. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
can I help you? Yeah. I'm doing fine, Scott. Well, thank you. Well, see, but what happened was Bill Gertz was supposed to be our guest, and I don't know whether he had a real cold or if I interviewed him earlier in the week, and I'm usually not very rude. I wasn't rude to him. I just kept asking him how he could say that he'd never heard of Operation Bazinga targeting the World Trade Center. Hello. I lost you there. Okay, well, anyway, of course, we have his article he wrote 2 months before the attack, talking about attacking the World Trade Center, and he said it wasn't true. And I said, I got it. How could you write it? He said, I was mistaken. Sure, that, well, anyway, so we decided to play it by ear, and I'm just glad we had so many great callers. Yeah. Well, I think they knew exactly what was going to happen. I think that they. Well, we do know that the man who financed Muhammad Atta was the head of the Pakistani ISI, which is a surrogate of the CIA. And we do know that that man was over here. Boy, we're having real problems. We do know that that man was over here meeting with high government officials on September 11th. I can't tell you what happened. All I can tell you is we knew the attack was coming. We did nothing to stop it. But we'd given the terrorists free rein going back to the 80s. We were organizing the terrorist cells here, and we let them do it. And they're here. They're still here today.